Welcome back to the Kefir Rundown. From WHQR Public Media, I'm your host, Camille Mojica. This week, Kelly joins us to talk about a government meeting on homelessness that happened this past week, and then Ben joins us to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Stick around. Kelly covered a meeting from this past week that was a joint meeting between the city and county about homelessness and what is needed and what can be done. Here she is now. Welcome back to the Kefir Rundown. I'm here with Kelly Knoyer.
I'm here with Camille Mojica. Hello.
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 Hello. I have you here because recently there was a joint city-county meeting on homelessness, and you watched it.
Yes, it happened on Monday. It was the second one that they've had this year so far. And, yeah.
Okay, we gotta talk about it then.
Yes. I mean, frankly, I'm not sure how much there is to talk about in terms of government decisions here.
Okay.
Because they had the same timeline plan that they had at the first meeting. At the first meeting, the county commission and the city council said, we haven't heard anything from service providers. Why didn't you give us any service providers to talk to their staff? And then their staff said, oops, okay, we'll go get some service providers. So this was mostly service providers telling them what they're up to. And then they passed a resolution in both bodies saying that they had some goals.
Okay, so what were some of those goals?
Basically, they were three things. Figure out an existing inventory of homeless services, hear directly from homeless individuals, and develop a strategy to address this problem.
Okay, is there any plan of action on how they're going to do those things?
Not yet. They have a timeline, and I saw this timeline initially at the first meeting, which is why there's not a lot of new information here. They basically plan on having a working group develop some findings over the course of the next few months, talking to different people, figuring some stuff out, and then they're going to present to these two government bodies later in the summer. July or August is when they said.
Okay.
So that'll be, I think, the third meeting, and then they're supposed to take what they hear and turn it into an action plan.
Okay. So who actually spoke at this meeting? What was talked about?
Gosh, there were a lot of different speakers, probably a dozen, I would guess. I will go into the highlights. Not all of them had a lot of time to speak, and not all of them had a lot of questions, but there were a couple interesting things.
Okay.
Katrina Knight spoke for a long time, but the audio wasn't working well, so I don't actually know what she said, unfortunately. The county stream just didn't have good audio, but it seemed like a good conversation from the questions that I heard the commissioners and county and city council members asking. The second speaker who ended up with a microphone that did work was Andrea Stowe, who is the director of the Continuum of Care under the Council of Governments. That's kind of the umbrella organization that oversees all of these other homeless organizations. And she kind of set the tone for the rest of the discussions by stating the need and just how big the problem actually is in this area.
Okay, so how big is the problem? Did she give us any numbers?
Yes. So part of the mission of the COC is to do the point in time count every year, as is mandated by HUD. And they found that there are 316 unsheltered homeless this year, in this year's point in time count, which was up 57 from last year, which is quite a bit. And that's 316 unsheltered out of a total of 585 homeless. So that's pretty bad. And she said that of who they are tracking, 23% are able to exit to permanent housing, which is a very low number compared to other COCs. So we're not doing great as a community in dealing with this problem right now. COC, separately from the point in time count, has a waiting list for services. And at the point that she gave this presentation, there were 922 households on that waiting list across the Tri-County area, and more than 800 of them were just in New Hanover County.
Okay.
So 800 people waiting for services, waiting to get housing in New Hanover County.
Is that because, well, I'm assuming that's because we just have a lack of housing in the county.
Yeah. I mean, when she was asked what her top priority is, she said we need more permanent housing. And this is the problem that I've been hearing from a lot of advocates. Even if they are doing transitional housing or if they have people in shelter, there's nowhere for them to go after they get stabilized because there's just nowhere affordable for them to rent. There's not really permanent supportive housing available. So even if they get families like out of a crisis, that next step just isn't there. When I talked to Family Promise, they house homeless families specifically. They were talking about how their transitional housing used to be a 6-month program, and now they have people staying in those apartments for 2 years before they're able to find anything. So there's just not currently housing that's affordable to the people who need it, and it's making it so the entire system is kind of gummed up. You can't really cycle through this waiting list mm-hmm. when there's nothing on the other side for people to jump into. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with a certain number of people who are in crisis, and then they're there until there's something for the after, and then there's nothing there. So what do you do? That's why she said we need to invest in more affordable housing. That's the main priority she has.
Okay, so those were some of the highlights, but what did you hear from the elected officials about some of these things?
I would say largely they were appreciative of what the nonprofits are doing in the community. I'll note David Joyner, for example, mentioned that he really appreciates the religious organizations that are working on this. He shouted out United Methodist Churches in particular, because that's, I would say, the main denomination that's involved in homeless services in mm-hmm. New Hanover County. Others were talking about the merits of one strategy versus another. Charlie Rivenbark, for example, was saying, we've had a million meetings in the past about needing to do something. I'm ready to just do something. We need to actually do something. Mm-hmm. So he's tired of waiting. What we did hear was some debate also about how to do this and what is actually worth doing. And I would say that Dane Scalise and Luke Waddell from the County Commission and the City Council, respectively, were kind of voicing concerns about trying to throw money at the problem. Scalise specifically said, spending money won't solve this issue. I would say that a lot of the people in the room who are advocates or involved in this work would say, yeah, maybe it doesn't solve the whole problem, but it sure does help. That's why they wanted to do a housing bond a few years ago, even though it didn't pass. And also Dane and Luke were talking about the criminality of homelessness. Not everybody deserves help is basically what Mr. Scalise was saying. You know, they need to be dealt with a different way if they're doing criminal behaviors. He mentioned a rape that happened at the library deck, the library parking deck back when there were a lot of people staying there.
Mm-hmm.
The response to that from Rob Zappel, who's also on the county commission, was, yeah, I mean, crimes are crimes. We should deal with them as criminals, but being homeless is not the problem there. It's the criminal behavior. So kind of just arguing around the problem, I would say, in that respect. Like I said, they didn't develop a strategy coming out of this. They passed a resolution saying that they would do that once they had more information.
Okay. Was there anything else that was interesting?
Yeah. Let me talk about two different interesting things. First was Frankie Roberts from Link was one of the speakers who talked about his program. His program is Leading into New Communities, which is helping people who've just come out of incarceration kind of get their life together. And he had kind of an interesting thing to say. Rob Zappel asked him about sex offenders, and Frankie Roberts said, they actually have some of the lowest recidivism rates of any of the people we take care of, and it's really hard to house them. Only 3% are ever, you know, caught committing another crime or ever sent back to jail. And he said that it's very difficult to house them. And then Zappel asked, so what happens if they're not housed? And Robert said, well, they end up going back to jail, because if you don't have a place to stay and you're a sex offender, then you're not able to do all of the things that's required of you for the sex offender registry.
Oh.
So you end up going back to jail. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It's not something you typically think about. And I don't think that most people are like, oh, we need to help sex offenders more. But I thought that was a really interesting point, that several of the people who've ended up going back to jail, from that very small percentage who do recommit, it's because they just don't have resources available to them. And they have even fewer resources than the average homeless person, because certain shelters won't take them in,
yeah,
that kind of thing. Which I think is a responsible choice by some of those shelters, especially if they're serving families or kids or it's mixed gender or whatever. But I thought that was an interesting perspective. The other thing I thought was interesting had to do with Eden Village.
Okay.
In the past, this organization, which has kind of a religious bent, has gotten kind of full-throated support from government, and it's gotten financial support from government. But when Tom Dalton, who's in charge of Eden Village, came up to speak, there were some tough questions for him this time, which I have not really seen come up before. And the they primarily revolved around who is staying there and how they're allowed to stay there. Because Eden Village operates differently from a lot of other homeless service providers that are similar to it. It's similar to permanent supportive housing, but it's not necessarily permanent. There's a flat rate that they're charged per month. It's $300. And there are certain conditions that would cause somebody to get kicked out. And there's now at least been one case that I guess county commissioners and city council members found concerning. And it was that a pregnant woman was asked to leave when she was staying there.
Why?
It seems like it's a mix of behavioral issues and the fact that she was pregnant.
Hmm.
Because those houses at Eden Village are meant for single individuals only.
Okay.
Married couples can't move in. You can't move your partner in if you end up in a long-term relationship. So this woman ended up pregnant, and then she was kicked out. And there was some question of, was it behavioral issues or what? And, I mean, some of these commissioners and council members were really drilling down, like, so is there a case where a pregnant person would be allowed to stay? And the answer seemed to clearly be no. We would find something else for that person to do.
Okay.
And I don't know the identity of that person. If you are listening to this podcast and you do, I would like to talk to them. So please email me at katekenoyer@whqr.org. I'd like to hear kind of what went down from that perspective. That was quite interesting to hear. The other thing that council member Celette Andrews brought up is there's a drug sniffing dog that goes into the houses at Eden Village, apparently. She seemed to be a little bit put off by that. But this is kind of like a difference of opinion kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I found it interesting because I've heard from other service providers that they're concerned about some of these choices. And I have never heard public concern from elected officials until now about these issues. So I know that Eden Village is asking for additional funding for this project called God Pods. I'm curious to see how those conversations will go, since it seems like now a little bit of the shine has maybe come off. I think that the God Pods could be really good for Wilmington because we need additional shelter beds. If there's 300 plus unsheltered individuals and they have 40 God Pods ready to go that people can stay in overnight, that's important. But I know from conversations that have been had at the COC that the way that they're currently set up to work programmatically might make them kind of high barrier shelter, which isn't necessarily going to help a lot of the people with the highest needs. I think they would charge $10, for example, per night to stay in those God Pods.
Okay.
So maybe the fact that city and county officials are questioning some of these things means that maybe they will ask for changes to the program in exchange for the land that Eden Village is asking for, or in exchange for financing. We'll see. So far, there haven't been a lot of strings attached to the money that government has given to that organization. And I'm curious to see if that continues to be the case or if it changes.
Well, we know you'll be following it because you are always following housing and all of these issues. Kelly, thank you for being on the show with me this week.
You're welcome.
Here's Ben to talk to us about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the UNC school system and in greater capacity. Welcome back to the Cape Fear Rundown. I'm here with Ben Shockman. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Cami.
Okay. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI.
DEI.
We have to talk about it because there are potential changes coming to DEI policies in the UNC school system, which is basically the North Carolina State Schools.
Correct.
Okay.
So it is 16 public universities and one boarding school, I believe. So there's 17 institutions.
Okay.
So here's what's happening. Last week, I think it was last Wednesday, so April 17th, I think, the governance committee of the Board of Governors. So it's a committee that's under the larger board that runs the state university system.
Okay. That's what this Board of Governors is.
Yes, that's the Board of Governors. This committee approved language that will need a full approval of the full board that would basically repeal and replace the current DEI policy that's been in effect for a couple of years.
Okay.
And that policy requires a DEI chief type position.
At each school?
At each school. So at UNCW, that would be Danielle Roseborough.
Okay.
And a number of other DEI related policies. This is certainly not unique to North Carolina. We're seeing DEI efforts in state government and state education systems faced with legal challenges and pushbacks, and there certainly are some places where, you know, DEI does seem to run afoul of, you know, a number of court precedents. The big case, obviously, was the, you know, whether or not race conscious admissions could be used and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But here specifically, we're talking about if this is approved in May, it's going to mean, you know, those 17 positions, those DEI chief positions, are going to have to get reimagined or relabeled or removed. No one's really sure what's going to happen. UNCW has not been willing to comment on this yet. They declined my request for an interview with either Chancellor Aswani Valetti or Provost Jamie Weinbrake because they said this is still all unfolding and we don't know yet.
Okay. Do you have a little bit of context as to how this came to be? Was this just sudden?
It felt sudden to people. This blindsided a lot of people. I think people in the DEI world have known for some time that there is pushback that has been building. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I think some has to do with just a more limited government, you know, administrative bloat point of view. I think there are some people who literally just feel like these are policies that could just be written into, you know, the charter of a school or the hand or the, you know, rules and regulations of a county government that we don't need an office to do it.
Okay.
I know people in DEI would strongly disagree with that, but that is – and then I also know there's another probably more vocal form of pushback that feels like DEI is actively racist, that it is – some would say counter-racist.
Okay.
That it is discriminating against white people effectively and discriminating against conservatives, discriminating against Christians in its efforts to, you know, lift up and provide equitable opportunities for – you know, people of more marginalized faiths or black people or Hispanic people or stuff like that.
Okay. Now this gets us into an opinion piece that was run in the Carolina Journal by Mr. Woody White about diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Correct. So Woody White, former New Hanover County Commissioner and current member, he's a member of the Board of Governors now. He used to be on UNCW's Board of Trustees.
Okay.
So he'll be one of the people making this vote in May. And in his opinion piece, he basically said, I had a front row seat to the creation of DEI offices at UNCW, at the county, at New Hanover County, at the city, because he was a county commissioner at the time.
Okay.
And this obviously won't surprise people. A lot of these offices were created after the murder of George Floyd, which I will note, Woody was one of the first people in town to call that murder.
Okay.
He's a defense attorney. He deals with law enforcement. Quite a bit, and has had some interesting things to say about law enforcement practices. And he called that murder.
Okay.
So it's more complicated than just, you know, Woody White is mad that there was an uproar about Derek Chauvin's behavior.
Yes.
Murderous behavior, just to be very clear. So I'm paraphrasing here, but I hope I'm paraphrasing fairly. He's saying, you know, this might have come from a noble place. But it has morphed into something that is, you know, toxic and un-American and racist in its discrimination of people that, you know, frankly, look like him, actually, you know, white Christians. But that is the argument he's making. He is far from the only person making this argument. I think he speaks for a certain portion of the population. But what I thought was interesting was that this opinion piece is about more than just what's happening in the UNC system. He is suggesting that DEI is, you know, effectively a policy cancer on everything, you know, on government, on schools. And that's interesting to me because while Woody White is no longer an elected official, he still has quite a bit of sway. He's a very influential person in the conservative world here in New Hanover County. And he's one of the most recent appointments to the New Hanover Community Endowment. And that's where I saw a little bit of potential tension.
Okay. Why is that?
Glad you asked. Well, Woody is clearly, you know, taking aim at diversity, equity, and inclusion as they have come to be interpreted in the year 2024.
Okay.
Equity is one of the endowment's four main scopes, one of their four main buckets, one of their four main, you know, areas of concern. They're looking at social equity, health equity. We actually have a panel coming up
about health equity,
talking about some of that. And inclusion is one of their core values.
And, like, this is what the endowment says.
This is what the endowment says. This is on their webpage. And so I was curious what the endowment thought about this.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to pick a fight, but he's an influential person. He's on the endowment board. It's not a secret. He put this out into the world in an opinion piece. He wants this stuff gone. And I'm curious, has there been any soul searching or any potential changes at the endowment?
Okay.
And what I'm told from the endowment is basically that he was speaking in his own capacity. He's one person, and that they still remain committed to all the things that they were committed to before. Okay. I also asked the county commissioners who appointed him, and I got largely no answers. Commissioner Dane Scalise, and friend of the show, sent me an excerpt from Uri Berliner's article in the Free Press with a link to it, even though I sent him the link first. So he knows I'm familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the excerpt is basically talking about it's Berliner's take on the frictionless way that NPR was cranking out, left-leaning reporting that demonized Republicans and conservatives.
Yeah.
And so I asked for some follow-up. I haven't received it yet. It's been a couple of days. I basically said, well, if your concern is that, as Berliner obviously thinks, that NPR and public radio writ large is far too liberal, this would be a good time to hear some conservative points of view. So if you we could have a conversation about this. But I didn't get a response to that.
Okay.
And then I also got a response from Commissioner Leanne Pierce, who basically said, she loves everyone regardless of the color of their skin, and that she's going to go with God. Follow the word of God, I believe is what she said. Didn't get into the granular issue of the county appointing people to the endowment or any of that. So I appreciate the response, but I don't know what to make of it. I'll have that in some reporting next week. The rest of the commissioners, I don't think, wanted to really take this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I'll leave you with this. I'm not sure how much influence Woody White will have on the endowment. If what he wrote in the Carolina Journal will resonate with the county, if they will take a look at how they do DEI, or whether or not they'll say, okay, and we're just going to keep on keeping on. I do know that changes are almost definitely coming to UNCW, because given the makeup of the Board of Governors, I find it unlikely that they won't vote the way I think they're going to vote in May.
Okay.
Which would be to repeal this stuff. And I think this might be a conversation for another time, but the conversation I hope to have with people like Chancellor Aswani Valetti, and even Woody White, if he wants to come on the show, is a couple of years ago I did a story looking at the demographics of UNCW.
Okay.
It is overwhelmingly white. It's one of the whitest universities in the state. It is way off, disproportionately to the black population of southeastern North Carolina. I know the university pulls from all around the state, but it's off by the state average. It's off by the national average. It's off by the regional average.
Okay.
It's just, and same for faculty. And that's something they've been working on. And I think, why is that a problem? I think that shows that people aren't even having the opportunity. I'm not talking about, what grades people are getting or where they're going after, but like just getting through the front door into university.
Yeah.
It seems like something is going on there. And I've had conversations with people who said, they're way behind in terms of being able to recruit from black communities. Going to black families whose kids are like 10 and saying, hey, college is a thing you can do. Here's what you'll need to save. Here's what's going to cost. Here's how you might want to think about your high school career.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not saying that everyone should get a trophy or that like if you're a black student, you should automatically get straight A's, but just making sure they have the opportunity to go.
Yeah.
That seems like a problem. And if you don't have a DEI office, okay, what are the other ways you could deal with that problem? One of the concerns I do hear about DEI quite a bit is that it can become performative. I've certainly heard this critique from people of color about DEI in the corporate world.
Yeah.
I was listening to recently, There Are No Girls on the Internet was talking about NPR's struggles. and that Uri Berliner article, mm-hmm. one of her criticisms was, you know, Berliner is, you know, throwing rocks at John Lansing, the former head of NPR, for being, you know, super woke. And the host was like, you really think Lansing was that woke? This was the same, like, I think she called it mealy-mouthed, generic, toothless mm-hmm. DEI statement that, like, Coca-Cola put out. Right, Nike. Here at Nike, we are committed to, like, making shoes for everybody. It was like, you have to. You're in the shoe business.
It's your job.
It's your job. So I have heard that criticism quite a bit. And I think a fair way to evaluate that is to, you know, if you take the culture war and set it to one side and just look at the original problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, is there a fundamental unfairness here or a fundamental way in which one group of people is being left out to even have an opportunity to do something? And if that's the case, what do you do to fix it? So that's what I want to ask them. But we have to wait for the official vote, and then we can ask them. Because that's how it works
yes.
in this town.
Well, Ben, thank you for being on the show with me this week and following this. And we'll have an answer, when did you say? May?
In May.
Thanks for being on the show with me this week.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to the Cape Fear Rundown. Check out our show notes for relevant links and titles to the music we use this week. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or just general feedback, feel free to get in touch. You can shoot me an email at cmojica, that's M-O-J-I-C-A, at whqr.org, or you can find me on X at Cameo Reports. I'd love to hear from you. I'm your host, Camille Mojica, and I'll see you next week.